And good morning, everybody. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us on this Friday morning. And here is the news. As we approach the All-Star break in Major League Baseball, how about them O's? They are in first place, three games ahead of the Toronto Blue Jays. And to help us revel in this good fortune and for insight into the how and why of it, we turn again to Mark Hyman. He's a former contributing editor at Businessweek magazine and a former columnist for the Sports Business Journal. He's written for the New York Times. He's currently on the faculty of George Washington University, and he's also the author of several books, the latest of which is called Concussions and Our Kids. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good morning, Tom.
So the O's have won 50 games. This is the first time that they have won 50 games this early in the season since 1997, a year that they made the playoffs. And in a way, it's even more surprising given the fact that a few of the players, the stars that we expected, when we talked about this in April, some of the folks we expected to have, you know, these monster years and be such a big part of the success, they actually haven't delivered yet. And other people that we didn't expect have delivered. It's been really an interesting year for the Orioles.
Yeah, it's a good thing that no one listening today has any memory of what we said in April. I'm so comforted by that.
Other than Nathan Sterner, who remembers everything anybody ever says.
But, you know, I think it's just the nature of baseball. It's so hard to predict even, you know, 4 days into the future how the season will unfold. And this year, I think, is, you know, Exhibit A for the Orioles. You know, you talk about players who you thought would be critical to their success. Chris Davis.
Chris, I mean, last year he was hitting a home run every time he, you know, walked to the plate.
You know, Chris Davis, you know, led the American League in home runs last year, had, you know, over 30 at the break last year. This year he has 14. And I think as significantly, he has 9 doubles at nearly the All-Star break. He had 42 doubles last year.
Yeah, so he's really in a protracted slump.
He's been struggling for quite a long time. Then you look at, you know, Matt Wieters. Matt Wieters won the All-Star balloting for catcher in the American League. He's been on the disabled list since May 11th.
And you know, he's undergone Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, right? He's out for the year.
Yeah.
So the Orioles have made do at catcher, but, you know, certainly you couldn't have predicted 3 months ago that the absence of Matt Wieters wouldn't have been a big blow. Mm-hmm. And then Ubaldo Jimenez. The pitcher that the Orioles signed in the offseason, they signed him for 4 years, which is something they had never done before, paid him $50 million with the expectation that he would immediately move in and be the ace. He's been the least effective pitcher on the team this year. He's 3-8, and he's been wildly inconsistent. You know, some games, you know, a few games, very strong. Other games, throwing lots of pitches, walking lots of batters. So, you know, with minimal contributions from those three, it would have been very difficult to predict that the Orioles would be in first place right now.
Yeah, you've got some guys who are stepping up in ways that nobody would have predicted as well. Steve Pierce, what an interesting character he is. He's kind of a journeyman. He's played for 3 or 4 teams, including the Orioles, you know, over the last few years. And all of a sudden, last week, he was the American League co-player of the week.
Yeah, I don't think Steve Pierce would have predicted that Steve Pierce would have been co-American League player of the week 3 months ago. Steve Pierce is, you know, probably one of the top 5, you know, offensive threats in the American League right now. He's batting .322. He's got 11 home runs. Steve Pierce has been with 3 or 4 organizations. The Orioles have let him go a couple of times. He was a bench player looking for a spot on anybody's roster last year at this time. And he's, right now, he's one of the Orioles' most reliable hitters.
Now, how do you explain this? Is this coaching? Is this Showalter? Is this, psychological improvements one way or the other?
What a great question. the short answer is I don't know. There are players who over a period of time, kind of grow into their status as major league players. They just get to know their limitations better. You know, technically they're better. Steve Pierce would not be the first player to come into his own, you know, 3 or 4 years into a major league career. But it's unusual.
Yeah. Zach Britton, I watched him close out the game last night. He beat the Nationals. He's now the closer. He didn't start the season as the closer.
Yeah, another big surprise. The last time we were together, it was just before opening day, I think, or maybe the day after, Tommy Hunter was the starter. And all the talk was, you know, is Tommy Hunter going to succeed as the closer?
The closer. Mm-hmm.
And whether Tommy Hunter would succeed as the closer. Well, that lasted a week. And Buck Showalter, to his credit, moved Zach Britton into that role, and he's been lights out. So he's one of the best closers in Major League Baseball this year. His ERA is 1.33. He's got 15 saves.
Yeah, good for him. And Nelson Cruz, that's an interesting story as well. He had been suspended last year for drug use, PED use, but he's whacking a few home runs.
Yeah, he missed 50 games last year and was kind of a pariah. I mean, the reason that the Orioles, that Nelson Cruz was available to the Orioles for a one-year contract was because a lot of teams just didn't want to take a chance on Nelson Cruz. He was a persona non grata. The Orioles did take a chance, and I think they're pretty pleased that they did. He's got 28 home runs, leading the American League in home runs right now. And I'll tell you something about Nelson Cruz that has really impressed me this year. It's been a very difficult year for Chris Davis, and Nelson Cruz has kind of come in and become that power guy in the middle of the lineup that Chris Davis was last year. And Nelson Cruz, it seems to me, is very sensitive to that and how that's affected Chris Davis. And if you watch how things kind of play out in the dugout, you'll see that anytime Chris Davis hits a home run or does something positive, Nelson Cruz is the first guy there to hug him, to offer encouragement, pat him on the back. And I think that's an insight into Nelson Cruz and the extent to which he understands the psychology of what's going on.
And that's great to see teammates working like that together.
Yeah, very impressive.
And, of course, there have been so many exciting moments. I mean, Monday night when they were playing the Nationals, they're tied into the 11th inning, and the Orioles hit three home runs on the top of the 11th.
That was a great game.
That sets a major league record. Chris Davis was one of the guys who slapped a homer in that inning. We have these moments. Sometimes it's defense, sometimes it's offense. Last night it was great defense, great pitching that squeaked out a win. It's terrific. Now, you know, there's been all this talk about parity in Major League Baseball. And, you know, we're a very fickle public here. You know, sometimes we complain about parity when there are no star teams. Other times we're terrible. We're very critical when it's only the Yankees or only the Atlanta Braves, only the big teams with all the big payrolls. But this year, there really is a kind of an even playing field.
Well, there's no question.
Especially in our division.
Exactly. I mean, look at the American League East this year. You know, typically the Orioles are looking up at, you know, who? The Red Sox and the Yankees. This year, the Red Sox are in last place.
Yeah, they're and 9.5 games out. Yeah.
You know, I hesitate to predict since my prediction record is about 0-500 on this show. But I would predict that the Red Sox finish last in their division.
Yeah.
They just don't have a good team this year.
And the Yankees are banged up. I mean, they got a lot of injuries. They have a terrific pitcher, this guy Tanaka, who at one point was 11-1.
Right.
He's now 12-4, but he's not pitching.
Well, you know, Tanaka has a tear of his ulnar collateral ligament in his pitching elbow. He's out indefinitely and likely to have Tommy John surgery, which means forget about him for at least a year. So the Yankees are...
2 weeks ago, folks were talking about how he could plausibly be the rookie of the year, the Cy Young winner, and the most valuable player in the American League.
And the Yankees paid him a ton of money. I mean, just an enormous amount of money. The Yankees, I don't think, are the second best team in the American League East. I guess Toronto would be. They're in second place now. But it's... You know, the stars are kind of aligning for the Orioles this year. And as to your point about parity, you know, 5 years ago, we were complaining that there was this elite class of teams, you know, with a lot of money to spend, and they won every year and wasn't that boring. We had these teams that never won. Now we've got the reverse, and there are some people who are complaining, oh, this is terrible. This
we
parody.
Want the superstar teams.
You know, where are those super teams that I remember? So I think baseball fans, you know, sometimes, you know, it's always 5 years ago, which seems like the good old days to some baseball fans.
The All-Star Game coming up a week from today at Target Field in Minneapolis. It's important, actually, in that given that the fact that the Orioles may just end up in the World Series, the winner of the game has home, the league that wins has home field advantage. So there's almost there's something of a plausible self-interest in the outcome of this game for the Orioles.
That's a good point, Tom. For a long time, the All-Star game was just a showcase game. You know, just a game for fans to enjoy and for, you know, to showcase the best players in the game. Now it actually does have some meaning because, you know, if the World Series is tied at 3 games apiece, you're going to be thinking back to the All-Star game and who won the All-Star game.
And it's even possible, what are the possibilities of the All-Star game returning to Camden Yards?
Well, I think quite good, actually. The as you say, the 2014 game next week is in Minneapolis. That's an American League city. Next year, the game is in Cincinnati, and that's a National League city. So the game will be returning to an American League city, more likely than not, in 2016. And the Orioles are very interested. And based on I think, what we're hearing and just the facts on the ground, the Orioles have a pretty good shot at getting the game in 2016.
Wouldn't that be exciting? On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Mark Hyman is here. We are talking sports. The World Cup, Brazil gave up 7 goals to Germany.
Yeah, that was a bad day for Brazil.
Explain. How does this happen?
That's a lot of goals in a soccer
game. Lot of goals.
You know, it's interesting. My son was in Brazil for the initial round and saw all 3 U.S. games. And he shared the view that he was hoping that he was not in the country when Brazil was eliminated.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Talk about a day of mourning. It'll be a year of mourning.
Oh, my God. There were people crying in the stands during that game.
Now, the fact that that Germany scores 7 goals against Brazil, they go into the final against Argentina, 1 o'clock Sunday. Are they riding as high as one might assume they are? I mean, are they the odds-on favorite here, having just pulverized Brazil?
Yeah, Germany has a very strong World Cup history. And I think they would have been the favorites, frankly, whether they had beaten Brazil 2-1 or 7-1. Germany is just, you know, a World Cup powerhouse. So I think they're the favorites going into the final. I think from a parochial U.S. perspective, these have been a very successful World Cup games because
certainly know who Tim Howard is now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that, as the American presence in the World Cup increases and our profile increases, I really do think that we're seeing the creation of a generation of soccer fans in ways that for many years, a lot of soccer enthusiasts were hoping for, but really didn't happen. But I think soccer is turning the corner in the U.S. I really do.
You know, the big hump they have, as so many people have observed, is there's so few timeouts that television really has a tough time making any money broadcasting the games because there's just no place to put commercials. I mean, is there a way around that? Although, even given the fact that it's pretty scarce on television, you know, girls and boys all over the country play soccer way more than they certainly ever did.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge participant sport among kids in the U.S. In terms of TV, yeah, that's an issue. But I don't worry about networks' ability to make money televising sports. I'm sure they'll figure that out. Yeah, I think the other challenge, of course, is that there's not much scoring in soccer. And, to watch a two-hour soccer match and see one goal, That takes a change in kind of your perspective about sports. You know, imagine watching a basketball game that ended, 4-2.
Yeah, and you got to understand the nuances of it, and you got to appreciate the athleticism of these guys.
Exactly.
And the way they are running around like crazy, and there's so few substitutions. I mean, it's really just the rules of it are quite interesting.
Yeah, the athleticism is incredible, and the more you understand about the game, the more you appreciate that and recognize it when you see it. And I'm learning too. I didn't grow up playing soccer, but I really enjoyed watching World Cup this time.
All right. Well, we will be there at 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon to see the final. Mark Hyman, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Mark Hyman, he is on the sports management faculty at George Washington University. His latest book is called Concussions and Our Kids. We've got a link to more information on our website. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. Maryland Morning is an original production of Your Public Radio, WIPR in Baltimore. The program is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. When they're not producing our program, they have a tribute band for Sonny and Cher. They're very good at it. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. We have production help from Brandon Block, Alexander Kennedy, and Justina Latimer. Coffee is provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. You can find them on the web at zekescoffee.com. You can find us on the web, too. Come to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. You can leave a comment about something you've heard or make a suggestion about an interview you'd like to hear on our show. For Sheila Cast and the entire Maryland Morning team, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend.